everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice from a local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifewood Christian Resources.
Do you ever look at the articles that William Vander Blumen writes?
I do.
Oh, he's got some pretty good stuff going on.
Writing in Forbes and all over the place.
I know. Have you seen the...
He's kind of a big deal.
Have you seen the facility they're in?
I have. Just moved into it, man.
Wow. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And we need to look at it as we continue to look at the inside of our facility.
We need to go visit him.
Yeah, let's make a trip. Road trip to Houston.
Yeah, road trip.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's drive so you can eat at every restaurant on the way.
That's a long...
All right, I was just joking. I do not want to drive with you any distance whatsoever.
That's 14
hours? Okay. I was just doing a lead-in to the sponsor, if you want to go there.
Well, Vander Blumen Search Group, they are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vander Blumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com.
What I love about both the blog and the podcast is that the audience determines the direction that we go, for the most part. We pivot as the audience indicates their interest, their need, and their desire for us to give information, both on the blog and the podcast. Well, not too long ago, we did an interview with the Mike Harlan. And Mike Harlan, director of Lifeway Worship, just shared some, from his perspectives, basic issues. And I got to tell you, Jonathan, that thing just caught fire. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was our single highest listened to podcast.
It was the single highest download, like the day it dropped.
Okay. Well, that's still...
It's still not the top because we have some older ones that just have more time. Okay. But it's catching up quickly and it will soon be.
Okay, Jonathan. Can I just say it was a very listened to...
It was big time.
It was big time. So,
do y'all care that my mother downloaded it about 700 times? Is that a...
It only counts once.
Well, that didn't... I betrayed my knowledge or lack thereof.
They would identify...
That would have just been a dent in the downloads too.
Yes, even the 700. But Mike, welcome back. And as I've been talking to Mike, I want Mike to be a regular every month, every quarter, just whatever the case may be, as we have topics, because there's a lot of interest from pastors, non-worship leader staff, and laypersons who want to hear pastor-type people interact with worship-type people. And it's not really me interacting with you. It's mainly me listening to you because I don't have a clue about some of these things. But welcome back, Mike.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here, Dr. Rainer. And really, I'm a fan of what your writing is bringing to the discussion about worship. And I love it when you blog about worship because our phones start ringing in Lifeway Worship Area when you say something about it.
For better or worse.
It's always good, and it's always a discussion starter. And I think that's the point of all this, is a conversation so that we can learn from each other, and church leaders can hear what others are seeing and learning and observing and understanding from the Lord. And I think it makes us all better. So I'm grateful for the opportunity.
So this past weekend, I was in Panama City, Florida, and Highland Park Baptist Church, Highland Park. And I noticed something. It's time for worship to begin, and I was waiting on the lights to dim. They did not dim. No, somebody, he said, no, I want them to see each other.
Yeah. Wow.
It's just a better worship experience when the lights stay on.
I agree.
That's a mega church in Panama City, now the largest church in Panama City, and they are learning from you, Mike. It was a good time, but just to hear the influence just almost immediately. There's another pastor that I'm trying to teach some of these principles, Jess Rainer in church at Spring Hill. And Jess, if you're listening, continue to listen.
Maybe go back and listen to that other one again.
Yeah, one more time.
The first time.
One more time. All right, Jonathan, I know that we've got another fascinating topic, and let's talk about it.
Well, we've alluded to this topic before on the podcast and on the blog. You've written blog posts. It was one of the trends that we talked about that we got from Leadership Network earlier this year when we did those 12 trends they're seeing in megachurches. And it's something we mentioned in the podcast with Mike, and that is the disappearance of choirs.
Okay.
And not that they're just like vanishing, it's just that churches aren't having choirs anymore.
So the first thing that we would say, Mike, is that true?
Well, yes and no.
It depends.
I think the starting place of the conversation, I mean, certainly the research. And I remember the congregational report that comes out every, decade or so, that I think you've referenced that.
Probably
I can't
so.
Remember.
The one from Duke?
Yeah, I think that's the one, exactly. It certainly suggests that the choir is disappearing, because it was maybe 20 or 30% decline over a decade in the appearance of choirs in churches. But now, when I think about that, I think what my answer to that would be, absolutely, the choir as we have known it historically is disappearing.
Okay.
What I think is happening more often is, first of all, how do you define what a choir is?
I don't know, Mike. How? I'll sit back and listen.
We could do comedy too, a choir. I mean, think about it. There's a church somewhere in a county seat town somewhere in the United States that have 15 people that get in a loft every Sunday, and they call themselves a choir. And if you ask their pastor, "Do you have a choir?" he'd say yes.
Right.
But there's a church in East Nashville that has 15 people on stage, but they're not in a loft and they're not wearing robes. And you ask that pastor, "Do we have a choir?" And he'd say no.
No, we have a praise team.
But both churches have 15 people on the stage leading worship. So I think the term gets in the way a little bit of answering that question accurately.
Okay.
Do we have a choir or not? I think the better question is, how's the choir changed? And it is changing. I think I would readily admit, as a matter of fact, I look back over the 25 years I stood on the stage of a church as a pastor of a church leading worship, and the role of choir changed over my time. Mm-hmm. Let's see, leading a local church and now serving in the church that I attend as a volunteer, the role of choir is changing. So I think that's the starting place of the answer to that question, is what do you mean by choir? But then the second question, I'm not trying to get down the points here, but the second question is, okay, if you accept the premise that the choir is going away, or maybe it's the terminology of the choir, then what is the function that is changing? And that's, I think that's the real more important question, is how is the role of choir? And if you'll permit me, I'll go right ahead.
We'll permit you, Mike.
Thanks for coming, by the way, while I'm talking.
Welcome to Harland on Worship.
Rainer on Leadership's going to go get a soda.
I'm sorry, but interrupt me at any time. But historically, the choir was more performance-oriented. It was what the term you'll hear a lot is presentational. And what that is in the course of worship, the choir is presenting something that, in contrast to congregational singing, the congregation is really intended to receive this, to accept this. And that's historically really the only function a choir had. They might start a service with a call to worship, or some kind of, if you want to use the real old sacred choral terminology, the introit. I know that's probably one you used a lot in your churches.
I was going to work that word in now.
I like that word.
I like that word, but I did not know the meaning of it. I thought it was a communicable disease, so that's something new for me.
Well, I thought it was a city outside of, somewhere in Michigan.
It's actually an antibiotic.
There's Detroit
you can take,
and Introit. That's good, Jonathan.
The Introit. But Baptists have called it a call to worship, where the choir comes and kind of compel the congregation to get, and it's usually up and big and grand and all that. And the more presentational function of the choir, you would historically, or back in the sacred church days, the choir would do a prayer response, like you'd have a time of prayer and the choir would answer that with some a cappella choral response to that. And it was something the congregation experienced but didn't necessarily participate in. In the modern church, what is happening more and more frequently is the choir is singing less and less by themselves. But they have the terminology that has emerged is what is called the worship leading choir. Now church musicians, the old school church musicians, get offended by that term, because that in their mind, it implies, you mean the choir wasn't leading worship before? But of course, that's a different conversation. But the truth of the matter is, the role of choir is becoming increasingly a large praise team, if you will.
Okay.
And a large prompting of the congregation to get involved and sing along. And the choir is doing less and less presentational and more congregational leadership. So that's how it's changing.
In my simple mind, is there a merger taking place, what used to be the traditional understanding of choir and what used to be the traditional understanding of praise team? They're getting closer and closer together.
No question about it.
Yeah, that line has been blurred.
Yeah, and I think the reason it's been blurred is a very practical reason. You're a pastor of a church. Would you rather have 50 people doing something or 10 people doing something?
Yeah, I'd rather have 50.
You'd rather have 50 doing it. Yeah. And I mean, and if the choir ministry is a disciple-making ministry, which I would say, maybe a topic for another blog someday, the choir ministry should be a disciple-making ministry. well, I don't want to just disciple six. I want to disciple as many people as I can. I want to influence. And so the choir becomes part of the disciple-making fabric of a church, and the bigger the better in that scenario.
Good. Good.
So when we talk about the role and function, I mean, we kind of have to go back to the roots and look at maybe the history of the choir. Like, where did, you know, who came up with the idea to, hey, let's throw 40 or 50 people in the behind the pulpit, you know, in the back, in the loft. The back.
You
there.
Like his metaphors of throw.
Yeah, just throw them up there.
Just throw them up there and let them go. I mean, like, where did we get that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. The choir, musically speaking, really finds its root in the church. I mean, even if you study music as a secular discipline, if you study the history of music, the beginnings of the history of choirs is all about worship.
Like in the Psalms?
Like in the Psalms. And, of course, you can look in the Psalms. You don't have to look any further than the Psalms to see that the Psalms themselves, even in the original manuscripts, many of them, several dozens of them, were addressed to the choir director.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you could assume by that. I mean, I don't think it's a reach to do this, but if there's a choir director, then there's a choir,
He's
right?
He's got to have something to direct.
Exactly. So, and then you can also assume by that, if there is a psalm that was written and addressed to the choir director, its intention was to be sung by the choir.
Right.
So the fact of the matter is, in the Holy Writ is the first hymnal, and it was designed for the choir and the church to use in worship. But I also like to draw attention to First Chronicles. 1 Chronicles 25 says that David set apart from among them the sons of Asaph, Jeduthun, and Haman for the ministry of prophesying with the accompaniment of harps, cymbals, and lyres. That's the Harlan version of that verse. That probably isn't verbatim, but that's basically what 1 Chronicles 25.
We Baptist Church have a lot of lyres in our worship.
Well, I was about to say, I've been accompanied by lyres many times, but yes. It's a different kind of lyre. But verse 8 of that chapter says, and this is interesting, I don't think it's an obscure reference, but it's an interesting one. Verse 8 of that chapter says, and they numbered 288. Well, now that wasn't a praise team.
I've never seen that before.
That was a large choir.
Jonathan, they threw a lot of people in that loft.
They threw a lot of loft in that loft. And when you look at the whole Ezra and Nehemiah part of Scripture, there's a lot of worship happening mm-hmm. there. You think about Nehemiah 8, which I think is one of the great worship chapters in all the Bible. And it was these services were led by choirs. You look in David's writings, when he dedicated the ark, when he moved it back to the temple, they had this huge worship service, and it was antiphonal choirs. And then you don't have to look any further than Revelation to see that a choir is part of eternity. Yeah. So the fact of the matter is, I don't worry about choirs going away, because choirs aren't our idea. It was God's idea, and I think there'll be choirs forever.
Okay.
Because of that.
Some form or another. So yeah. That gets to some of those other questions. So we'll now let me ask you this before we've got a few that we really wanted to make sure we ask, but this is just a curious question. Maybe you have the answer, maybe you don't. Where did choir robes come from?
Boy, that's a great question. I think it comes from, practically speaking,
modesty.
Yeah, modesty. Absolutely. I'll tell you what, I've been in both settings. And where I had robes, I didn't have robes. And as a minister of music, I was much more comfortable in the robe days, because I didn't have to worry about what was happening dress-wise in the choir loft. And, I mean, it's just quite that simple.
Yes.
I mean,
it
is. And for all your choir robe needs, visit Lifeway.com.
Well, exactly. We do sell choir robes. As a matter of fact, Jonathan, I'd be happy to get a representative in touch with someone.
It'll be at the bottom of this.
Yes. Lifeway.com/choir robes. I don't know if that's right or not, but it could be. So
maybe it should be.
Maybe
I don't
it should
know.
Be. I don't
yeah,
know.
Exactly.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So the reason I ask that is I know a pastor. His last name is Rainer, but we won't go any further with that. I know a pastor that just said we need to do away with choir robes, and they had the modesty panel and all that. So as far as modesty, it was okay. But boy, did he get pushback.
Well, you can get pushback. It's one of those doubtful issues that we talk about sometimes, choir robes or not. The Bible's not clear on that for sure, but I don't think it is. But modesty is an issue. Uniformity is an issue. But I'll tell you an interesting thing that's happening in churches that are doing away with choir robes. And, I mean, I've seen some stuff. I never did this myself, but I know worship pastors who provide on a quarterly basis swatches of colors and materials to their choir. to say, wear this in the next 6 weeks. And they actually color code, even though the choir's not in uniform, they match a decorum, a lighting strategy for that period of time, for that sermon.
Do you do that?
I never did that. But
so you've never been a swatch leader?
I've never been a swatch choir leader, but I know guys that don't do robes who go quite to the extreme of creating a different kind of uniformity that's incumbent on the choir member to provide their own costume, or costume's the wrong word.
That's fabulous.
Apparel. Yeah, it's true. That happens. I've never was one of those guys, though. I just want to tell you that.
All right.
Up front.
Let's talk about choirs as really just a strategy of the church, and not just in a discipleship-making function, which you mentioned earlier, but in a worship-leading function, and the strategy there.
Church planning is a wonderful thing that's happening now. This is a question that church planners are asking. Are we going to be a choir church or not? Do we... And there are a lot of churches that are in transition or whatever, might be thinking, is choir part of our DNA or not? This question comes up quite often. And what emerges out of that conversation is that most often what I found in a local church is that it becomes a leadership issue, not a functional issue. In other words, many churches don't have choirs because they don't have anyone that can lead one. Hmm. That's really one of the biggest issues driving choirs or not. There are a lot of churches you could talk to that say, we used to have a choir, but we lost this guy or this person moved away, and our new guy doesn't do choir. That's the comment I hear most.
Can we get like basic level of the difference in leading maybe a praise band, or even if it's just one guy up there with an organ and a
Is
piano?
It stage presence? Is more?
What's the technical difference, if you can distill that?
There can be some significant technical differences depending on what you're trying to do with the choir. If your choir is functioning where they are singing and presenting and leading music that is arranged for choir, that has choral nuances to it, you've got to have a leader that understands how to do that. I mean, it'd be like trying to have a restaurant and not have a chef.
Speaking Jonathan's language,
It would not go well. It you could put food out there, but if you don't have a chef, it's going to greatly impact your menu. So, but what is happening, and this goes back to a little bit about what we talked about last time, as churches begin to swing stylistically, churches move to a non-choir model, and what they were putting on their platforms to lead their congregation were people that were great performers, that were great artists. Could really deliver a song and maybe even engage a congregation, but you put them in front of a choir with a music stand in front of them, and they go cross-eyed. They don't even know where to start doing that. Believe it or not, many church musicians that are song leaders don't even read music well enough to lead a choir. They're doing it by ear. They're doing it by talent. So this pendulum that swung toward a contemporary model that often did not include choir because the contemporary leader didn't know how to lead one. So what we see is a gap. Now, and there's what I say to churches. I would say to any church or even any church planner. Matter of fact, I think Jess and I talked about this some time ago. You can make the strategic decision. You know what? We're not going to start with choir and do that because we're trying to create a community around a congregational thing that's going to, we're not going to have a loft, and you might have some strategic reasons to not do choir. That's one thing, and I can even support a pastor's vision on that if that's a strategic thing. It's another thing to not do choir because you don't have anybody who could lead one. That reveals a deeper issue around development of leaders.
Which is something we have talked about more than one occasion. With going back to Jess's church, his is just a resource issue as much as anything.
Sure.
He not only doesn't have people to lead it, he doesn't have people to be in a choir, even if he wanted them to
sure.
be in the choir. So.
And that stands to reason. I mean, in the early days of a church's life, they are the choir. And maybe that would be the terminology to use. Hey, we've got a choir, and it's all of us in this room right now.
So I was in a mega church in Arkansas not too long ago, and they had two full-time worship leaders. One was choir, one was whatever else that was. Is that common?
It's more common than it used to be, because very often the artistic leader, that is the song guy that can really deliver the moment as a performer, many times does not have the skill set musically to lead the choir. So churches that have wanted the best of both have often found that it's two different people.
Wow.
Now, I don't recommend that, by the way, but maybe that's another podcast. I think one person can do both.
Staffing of worship leaders is a topic we need to get to, because we have a number of churches now that have a contemporary worship leader, have a traditional, whether or not it's choir versus non-choir is stylistic, and they have two different – whoops,
true.
That's a different topic. Yeah. This is about choirs. Well, let's bring this back now to – choirs and congregational singing, largest choir. Yeah. Talk to us about that.
Well, this is a terminology that I used in every church that I served. I always told my congregation on a regular basis, you're the largest choir I lead. And I thought of them that way. I wanted to create moments in the congregational experience where they were the choir and really were owning it. And that took some planning and some preparation and some development of the congregation as you're there for a length of time. And I think any setting musically where the choir becomes its own entity, when it becomes its own community chorus, that we love to do the music art and we love to do sacred music art and we are our own organization, if that exists inside the church and it's in a vacuum and we don't understand that this is part of a larger thing that works together, and that really the largest choir we lead is the congregation, I think it can get unhealthy, can even get toxic and counterproductive. As a matter of fact, I think some of the churches now that have chosen to move away from choir might be churches that had a toxic situation with the choir they had, because the choir wasn't functioning in a way that supported the whole body.
Throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Absolutely.
Type of thing.
Yep.
Wow. These types of podcasts are, as we discovered last time, immensely popular. We're going to have you back again. Mm. There's too many topics that we want to cover. There are too many questions that pastors and other staff are asking. There are too many questions that I'm asking, because I am not qualified to answer all of these emails, tweets, texts, everything that comes in. So we're going to try to do more of this, because it is really scratching an itch, and it's helping pastors a lot. And that's why we're here, to help pastors and other staff. And that's why we have the kind of sponsors we have. Midwestern Seminary, for example, they're focusing on training pastors, and this is really just complimentary to all of that. So thank you, Mike, for being here, and thank you for coming back again, and we'll have you back very soon.
Thanks. Look forward to it.
Midwestern Seminary is located in the heart of the Midwest and is one of the fastest-growing seminaries in North America, and they offer a fantastic array of academic programs, including multiple online and residential options at the undergraduate, graduate, and doctoral levels. Midwestern's new 81-hour MDiv program, online program, and doctoral program have all been recognized as some of the most innovative and affordable in the country. There's never been a better time to begin your seminary education. Midwestern Seminary trains leaders for the church. Visit them online at mbts.edu/Rainer and start your ministry training today. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
If you happen to be listening to this through the blog, at the bottom, just where the resources are, there is a link to an event that Midwestern is doing if you are a Southern Baptist. And I know that we have a wide variety of listeners. And it is for the church. I'm going to be speaking there. Mark Dever, Paige Patterson, Kevin Ezell.
Dr. Jason Allen.
Yeah, Dr. Allen, the president of Midwestern.
I think H.B. Charles?
Yeah, I believe he is. It's other than yours truly, it's a great lineup. And I would encourage you, the first one is 1,000 is the limit. Mm-hmm. It's free meals, free books, a lot
t-shirts,
of great books,
all
t-shirts.
Kinds of stuff.
So I would encourage you to sign up for that, because once it's full, it's full. They can't take anybody else. And there's an opportunity to sign up right here today.
Yep. Well, thanks for joining us. Check that out. That's the For the Church event in St. Louis, June the 14th at the Southern Baptist Annual Meeting. Join us there, and join us next time on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe over on iTunes. Give us a rating and review over there, and visit us online at tomrainer.com.